We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy back to school. Seems like a back to school day out there, doesn't it? Ever read The Great Gatsby? I mean, we all had to read The Great Gatsby in some way, shape, or form, right? This quote from The Great Gatsby, good way to start off the week. Life starts all over again when it gets crisp in the fall, said Jordan. And I guess it always will. No matter how old we get, it's our way of clearing out the old and making room for something new. Big week ahead, for sure. Lots of new stuff on the plate. NFL kickoff. We have some jobs data coming. Big developments in downtown Milwaukee and much, much more, including a lot of kids getting back on their Microsoft devices this morning. So let's do two up as we do each and every opening for The Upswing. First up from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel over the weekend, Microsoft Corp is again expanding its footprint in Racine County, adding to its data center campus with a farmland purchase in Mount Pleasant. The big software maker paid $5.73 million for 28.6 acres at 13231 Lewis Sorensen Road. The seller was Nancy Rolving Trust, according to the deed posted online at the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. This transaction was recorded on August 29th. That follows an August 16th purchase of 1.4 acres of a ranch house on Highway 41, right near Lewis Sorensen Road. Microsoft paid Barbara and Thomas Rinke $800,000 for that property. The company has made a series of purchases since May, and many of those transactions were recorded this summer as it lays groundwork to continue its work to build in Mount Pleasant in Racine County. Tips and taxes. Both major presidential candidates have proposed exempting tips from taxes. And this could encourage more reliance on tipping and leave, you know, I think some workers a little bit more vulnerable. I'm sure when you bought your coffee this morning, you were out and about all weekend, you had an opportunity to leave a tip digitally, right? Americans are being asked to tip more often and in more places than ever before. But as we get into the political season, both candidates have now proposed tipping and taxes are more subsidized and prompting more businesses to rely on it. Now, this could have big, big impact, according to the New York Times. Economists across the political spectrum have panned the taxing on tips idea, arguing that it's unfair, favoring one set of low-wage workers over another. And it could have a lot of unintended consequences. It'll be interesting to see how this pans out as the campaign continues. But both parties calling, hey, should we tax tips, or should we leave that on the consumer's hands? I'm going to ask Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management, what his thoughts are on tipping and taxes when we come back from the break. We'll have that and much, much more. Is the American consumer starting to shake its collective bad mood? Maybe we're going to give even more tips. I don't know. Dave's coming up after the break.
Money. Money, 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 money.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Dave Spano, CEO of NX Wealth Management, joins us this morning. Dave, thanks for taking time out of your day.
What a beautiful day. Thanks for having me on.
Indeed. So both major political parties, both candidates, have embraced proposals to eliminate income taxes on tips, a move that could, in effect, subsidize tipping and prompt even more businesses to rely upon it. What are your thoughts on tipping and taxes, Dave?
Well, I do think it's funny, of course, not to be partisan, but of course, you know, Trump came out with it, and then Kamala came out with it, and it is interesting. You know, they're trying to win the Nevada vote, and that's really where that started. But you know, I did some research on this when I heard it. And the IRS estimates that there is $1.66 billion in tip income that is not reported. So nearly 90% of those who have tipped income say they underreport. So you have to look at it in who's getting tips, right? So it is a small percentage of Americans that in the workforce that do get tips. And the median income, according to the IRS, is $538 for tipped workers. So they are skewing to the lower income side of folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly skew younger. So those two things are interesting because if you don't tax income, and they're lower anyways, you know, most folks under a certain threshold are in the 0 to 10% income tax bracket, right? And then even with that, then there's this earned income tax credit. So, you know, you read a lot about how the bottom 50%, you know, don't pay income taxes. That's the reason why. It's not that, you know, they're not paying payroll taxes or their tax scoff laws. What they're really doing is they're on the lower income tax bracket because it is graduated up, you know, for the higher income tax income earners to pay more tax. So the lower income tax people, not only do they pay lower taxes, but there's an earned income tax credit. So what does it really mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a partisan political ploy, really. Mm-hmm. And what's it really going to mean to some people? You know, the flip side of it, if this would go through, who would say, I want to get tipped, right?
Right.
What if, your dentist says, yeah, you know, I did a great job. Can I have a tip, right?
Yep.
And they flip that thing around like they do everywhere else and say, hit 10, 15, or 20%. Could you imagine such a thing?
Yeah, it's just another revenue driver for so many people.
Yeah, it would. I think is ripe for an issue to say who can get tipped and how can they get tipped, and you know go to your dentist or anyone else, your mechanic, and he flips the thing around and says I'd like a 20% tip, and they know that's tax free. That would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, without a doubt. Always some politics at play, definitely. So you think is the consumer kind of starting to shake its collective bad mood a little bit? I saw something in the Wall Street Journal. They asked 1,500 voters about their feelings about the economy, and 34% said it was improving, up from 26% early in July. You know, what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I did read that article as well. The Wall Street Journal is a go-to, but we read it, and I was interested in it, and I was wondering if there was a couple of things that went into it. Number one, as you just said, is it a partisan thing? I mean, if half the country is blue and half the country is red, and now the Democrats are excited about their opportunities, did that change their outlook economically? That could be part of it. Or the other thing is it could be economics, right? The average price of gasoline has certainly come down. It's the lowest level since the summer of 2021. So people might be feeling better about it. But there's just no doubt if you did another survey and said, are your grocery bills too high? Yes. You know, is your education and healthcare costs too high? Yes. And are houses unaffordable? Those are all yeses. So that hasn't changed. And so I am interested that the timing of this, could it be, as you know, the 1,500 that they asked were voters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is it a partisan thing? Are they feeling better about their party? And normally, I will tell you, Jeff, normally this is what happens. Both sides think they can win. Both sides get promises from their side, and the market begins to rally. But September generally has a lot of volatility to it.
All right. There's a big wealth transfer coming. When we come back, we'll talk to Dave Spano about the $80 trillion plus in a great wealth transfer that is on the horizon. Some members of the millennial and Gen Z generations are poised to receive hundreds of thousands of dollars or even millions of dollars. And how should they tackle that? This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. Dave, a lot of baby boomer parents and grandparents have done pretty well in the last few decades, amassed unprecedented wealth, and it may be time to pass some of that wealth along to kids and grandkids. What do you, let's say, somebody inherits $250,000 from their wonderful Uncle Jim. What are the specific next steps that they need to take?
Yeah, well, first of all, there's a lot of steps that go into it, but who is going to get this money is really going to be interesting, Jeff, because, yeah. You know, they certainly, I've read the number 80 trillion, I've read 30 trillion, and I've read 100 trillion. No matter what, there's going to be a wealth transfer, right? And who gets it? So there has been a lot of studies that said, unfortunately, maybe Gen Z and the millennials won't get it. Gen Xers are going to get it. That is what the study said, is that money is going to go to Gen Xers. And if you look at how it's distributed, they're mostly going to be small distributions. I know it says $80 trillion, but you have to remember there's estate taxes that are done. There's gifting that has been done.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens to that money and who gets it? So that's one of it. You know, the people who are going to get it mostly looks like it's going to be 45 and up. And most of those folks have a plan in place. They've started to save for a house. They started to save for retirement. So they could just add to their current plan.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't started that, obviously, and you get a check from, was it Uncle Jim?
Uncle Jim, I just
Uncle
used,
Jim,
yes.
Do you have an Uncle Jim?
Oh, I do, yes.
All right. So you better be
wishful
nice
thinking,
Jim.
That's right.
Yeah, you better be nice to Jim, yeah. So, you know, first of all, it's an emotional process. It's a financial impact. So you cannot go into this without a plan. You know, consult with whoever, you know, your lawyer, your accountant, your financial advisor. Get a plan together. Just don't go by the seat of your pants. First of all, what you want to do perhaps is if you have high interest debt, perhaps pay some of that off. You know, obviously a diversified portfolio. Make sure the taxes are in order because there's a lot of planning that goes into place here. So if that's going to happen, you should start with a financial advisor. Make sure that it fits into your plan. Pay off debt. Make sure the portfolio is right, that the taxes are right. And make sure your own estate plan is in place. And I mean, we see so many people. I read 50% of Americans don't have a simple will in place. So, you know, do some of your own estate planning as well. And that obviously not to make this a pitch, but that's what comprehensive wealth management firms do. They talk about all of these things, estate planning, tax planning, investment planning, and inheritance.
Yeah. Use it as an opportunity to get everything in order for sure. I mean, you mentioned paying down debt as a priority. A lot of people, I mean, we've gotten some talking text line questions on it with the data breaches the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
So a lot of advisors have suggested freezing credit no matter what. What do you advise there?
Well, it's not a bad idea to do that, to be proactive, right, and protect your passwords. You know, remember the story of the guy's password was password, right?
Yeah.
You know, change them. Don't reuse them. You know, do use multi-factor authentication. Do all of these things. Watch your credit report. You know, there's a lot of ways to do that and make sure you do it. And a lot of times the credit cards will allow you to have that as well. So make sure you monitor it. You know, make sure you monitor your credit report. And freezing your credit is not a bad idea. I mean, especially if you get suspicious activity. If someone tries to file a tax return, if you see a gas station in New Jersey this morning when you're not in New Jersey, these are the things that you have to watch, right? So creditor monitoring services, alerts, you know, check your accounts regularly. These are just the things to be proactive. And you should do all of that because the data breaches aren't going to slow down and you have to protect your information.
Right. And that stolen data typically ends up on the dark web where hackers are going to dump the information and often attempt to resell it. So you got to be mindful on it. What, just quickly here in about 15 seconds, what else do we have to look forward to this week?
I think we're certainly going to have to talk about economically. We have to watch the unemployment. We have to watch for sure the inflation numbers because the Federal Reserve job is going to move from inflation now to employment, and these are going to be the big deals.
All right.
Forward.
Yep. Dave Spano, CEO of NX Wealth Management. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Your money, your downtown. I always say downtown Milwaukee is the economic and entertainment heart of the entire state of Wisconsin. Matt Dorner from Milwaukee Downtown, the economic development director at Milwaukee Downtown, joins us. So Red Arrow Park, one of downtown's most important parks, was identified as a priority project for redevelopment in the recently adapted Connecting MKE downtown plan that goes targets 2040 with all of its projects. But this one is one of the first up. Public commentary gathered during the plan update process led to the following goal statement regarding downtown's public realm. I think it's really important to see and hear this. Invest in the public realm by improving streets, parks, and other public spaces in ways that encourage a more vibrant, inclusive, and resilient Milwaukee. Red Arrow, for those that may not be familiar, is the one with the big ice rink. The rink is actually bigger than the Rockefeller Center in New York City. Always good to keep that in mind. But a new request for proposal hit the market last week. Matt Dorner has background on that. Matt, what is it all about, and what are your goals with this new process?
Yeah, thank you, Jeff, for having me on this morning and be able to talk about Red Arrow Park. As you mentioned, our public spaces are incredibly important. Red Arrow Park, an opportunity came up with the Park East Tax Increment Finance District to put some funds towards a redesign and thinking about the future of Red Arrow Park. We obviously know it's an incredibly important place for so many, the monuments that exist there. It's a place where people come to gather. As you mentioned, it's downtown Milwaukee, and it's only winter activation with the ice rink.
Right.
And really, now there's an opportunity ultimately to, get really high qualified design professionals that, to really help us reimagine as we look at the park and continue to activate it and help further engage with the surrounding properties, the surrounding streets, and really continue to look at how we can continue to improve that space.
So in terms of the funding for the project, who is all involved? What's the budget and how will it be funded? You said part of it is an existing TIF district. Correct. And then will there be additional dollars brought in for the project?
Yeah, right now what is funded is the actual design process. So there's a total all-in budget of about $400,000 for basically everything from what that design process looks like and as well as extensive public engagement. We know how important this space is. There's many stakeholders that are actively involved in the project right now. So ultimately, we want to make sure that we're getting a lot of feedback throughout that design process to really test whatever concepts are developed. Mm-hmm. So again, that process will include that public engagement as well as ultimately the design process as well.
And I'm sure a lot of that input was, no matter what, the ice rink is staying, right? Can I say that now or can I?
Personally, I do, ultimately the kind of we're approaching this with a blank slate, but at the end of the day, I do believe, we obviously need some sort of ice rink, in the greater downtown area. So obviously it's there, but we do know, that the current ice rink was installed in, I believe, 1999. So, approaching 25 years, we do know that there's continued maintenance issues as well. So as we look at, again, I do believe that probably is a feature in the redesign process. Right. But there's, we're also looking at how do you create that to be sort of a, all year round activation. Mm-hmm. So how can we further, what kind of materials, what kind of surfaces are our peer cities currently installing when they're putting in ice rinks and other types of features, something that can be used 365.
And it's an opportunity to take a holistic view at what could happen.
That's correct.
That's a beautiful part of the process.
It really is.
And then as you look at the economic impact of a redesign, how do you measure and quantify that as an organization?
It's really interesting in public spaces because ultimately the benefits are, qualitative as well as quantitative. As you see, we want to make sure that success. Big B Coffee will be opening up in the former Starbucks space later on this year, making sure that they're successful through the redesign process. How do we further bring people into the park? Mm-hmm. How do we, does the redesign process further encourage additional activation? Obviously, we're very present in the park, but I think through the redesign process, it opens up additional opportunities for more and more activation. If we look at the surrounding sites, kind of kitty corner from the Marcus Center Garage, which is also a priority project that was identified in the downtown plan. How does the park help support the redevelopment of some of these key parcels, and then also just continue to bring folks out and to gather and use these sort of unobligated spaces, but really, really drive traffic.
Yeah, and for all the apartment dwellers, all the condo dwellers, all the residents in downtown, you really can't put a dollar amount on the quality of life impact that parks have, no matter where you live.
That's exactly right. So we see, and again, you had mentioned it earlier, throughout the downtown plan process, when we were working on that update, over 50% of the comments coming in talking about the importance of continuing to invest in our public spaces. So again, I think when you're, you know, those are the types of things that really stick with you. When mm-hmm. you visit another city, you visit, you know, a vibrant public space. It's really kind of what stays with you. So again, you know, you need to have those locations for people to come, dwell, linger, stay as long as they want to kind of continue to do that. And then again, provide spaces for programming and events.
All right. Another thing that we all love, dogs. Matt Dorner from Milwaukee Downtown has a big update on the downtown dog park. When we come back, this is The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. According to a recent survey of downtown users, 71% of downtown residents who are dog owners categorized adding dog-friendly amenities in downtown as incredibly important or very important to enhance livability and quality of life. Matt Dorner, Economic Development Director at Milwaukee Downtown, joins us. He's been spearheading this downtown dog park for years. First, pop quiz, Matt. What's the most popular dog breed in the state of Wisconsin?
You know, that's a very good question. Yeah. As we, you know, I've done some, you know, some research. I've seen actually, you know, golden retrievers on some of the most recent surveys.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously anybody that spends any time downtown, you see dogs of all different sizes. And all around. So, you know, we got a Maltese Yorkie at the home as well. So, nice. You know, on the other end of the spectrum from a golden retriever, but you know, that's what I've seen. And certainly you see them on the streets as well.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Ding, ding. That is the correct answer. At least according to Forbes recently, the golden retriever was the most popular breed in the state. So come Thursday, again, a project you've been working on for years, the official groundbreaking for the downtown dog park. Give us the project overview and kind of the timeline once the shovels are in the ground on Thursday.
Sure. And we're excited to be at this point. Obviously, like you mentioned, it's a project that we've been spearheading formally out there fundraising for the last 2.5 years. Happy that we've hit a critical point. Obviously, we're continuing to, you know, this project will be continuing to fundraise and continue to seek additional support. But at the point where we can... you know, shovels are in the ground. Anyone that's went past the site recently, they've probably noticed some construction activity.
Yeah.
We're really excited to celebrate on this Thursday. So,
And again, the site is right on the river, right kind of before you hit the historic Third Ward, right?
Yep, exactly. So we're right on the corner of Plankinton and Clybourne. So right if you're at the Milwaukee Public Market, you look directly west across the pickleball courts and the dog park sites right there along the Milwaukee River. So we're super excited to be able to not only reinvent that highly visible site that's just been largely underutilized, create a community asset, install the river walk. We're super excited that we've been able to, you know, work with our friends at Fromm Family Pet Foods that is our title sponsor for the dog park, but they're also investing in Foxtown Landing and doing the brewery distillery event space project directly adjacent to it.
And this is another, you know, truly collaborative project. You said the Riverwalk District is involved, the city and the county, Milwaukee Downtown. There's a lot of funding partners at the table for this.
100%. And certainly our friends at the Historic Third Ward, where we've worked very collaboratively on our other enhancement projects underneath I-794. This is the next phase of the work that we've done collectively together. But everything from grants, philanthropic, to residents donating amounts of all different sizes, and dozens of corporate sponsors of all different levels getting involved in supporting the project. And we're really excited about the active conversations that we continue to have for folks that are interested in joining and supporting this really community-driven project.
And I know a lot of the work, as you said, has already started, but once it officially begins on Thursday, what's the time frame to opening?
Yeah, we do expect to open the project by the end of the year, so the next few months. So it should be, you know, we're actively under construction, and over the course of the next couple months, we will see really good progress in opening the project towards the end of this year.
All right. When we come back, Matt Dorner, give us all the details on the groundbreaking, what time and where, and we're all invited. So Matt will have all that information. Then some downtown stats that will really open your eyes, and Matt will talk about his crystal ball, what's next after the dog park for Milwaukee's downtown. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Yeah, I finally found a home. Welcome back to the Upswing. Since 2005, downtown Milwaukee has experienced a ton of investment. Over $4 billion in projects have been completed. Another $3.4 billion underway or planned, including the downtown dog park, which will have an adjacent brew pub attached to it, too. That groundbreaking is Thursday at 3 o'clock, Matt Dorner?
Yeah, so this Thursday at 3 o'clock, we're really excited to welcome the public down for the official quote-unquote first dig.
Yes.
With remarks from public officials as well as our title sponsor and other project leaders starting around 3:15. So we really, again, welcome. We expect a nice little crowd and to really enjoy, again, like I said, this community-driven project that's really brought people together from so many different motivations want to get involved in a project, whether it's the redevelopment of that key site or just, sheer love for their dogs.
All right. Very good. I'm sure you're hearing from a lot of national and some regional retailers. There seems to be a reemergence of really looking at downtowns from a retail perspective. Barnes & Noble expanding in areas that it wasn't 10, 15 years ago. What are you hearing from retailers in terms of downtown Milwaukee?
Yeah, so we've, enjoyed some really good success. We've had, a lot on the food and beverage side, continuing to open up in our downtown districts. Obviously, we're sitting very close to, Kohl's First Urban Store. So we continue to have really good conversations with folks that are interested in opening storefronts. So I think it's, as we talk about all these different projects and how they kind of sync together, continuing to invest sort of in the public realm and in our streetscapes and continue to drive traffic. So we are, there's continued to be really good interest in Milwaukee, I think, has continued to be looked at from our peer markets, has really seen some success over the last several years in terms of new openings.
Yeah. And in terms of, just crystal ball, maybe it's a Barnes & Noble, maybe it's a bookseller, but what are some of the other things that you're really looking at to build in downtown Milwaukee?
I think it's important to really kind of keep the foot on the gas in terms of the types of developments that we're seeing. So adding density, the more and more residents that we have downtown, that really is a key for driving more and more retail investment. Mm-hmm. So, and then continuing to have, wins on the business recruitment side. Obviously, over the course, some of the stats that we track since 2020 in the height of the pandemic, we've had over 8,000 jobs committed to downtown Milwaukee on the backs of, NM, Northwestern Mutual doubling down on their campus, Pfizer, Milwaukee Tool, Veolia moving into downtown as well. So just to name a few. So it's really about continuing to drive that investment. More and more employees downtown, more and more residents downtown. And that really, really does trigger and drives the demand on the retail side.
It all truly does work together. So you spend all of your days and time in downtown. What is your favorite, maybe your kind of hidden secret lunch spot?
Well, that's a good question. I certainly like to make my way around downtown. It's part of the job and spread it out.
That's right.
Obviously, being really, where our office is really located, obviously, in the avenue, so close to the 13th Market Hall makes it, obviously, an easy spot to stop by. You'll find me, probably on a weekly basis over at the Water Street Deli as well. So, I certainly spread it around, though.
Very good. I like it. All right. Thursday, 3 o'clock, the grand, not grand opening, but the grand shovel, first shovel in the ground for the downtown dog park. Matt Dorner from Milwaukee Downtown, appreciate you spending time with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always great to join you.